Hey friends, welcome to But What If You Did, the podcast where we share the empowering, encouraging stories from millennials thriving in the messy transitional seasons of life. I'm your host, Allison, and I'm a millennial on a mission to show you what's possible when you stop playing it safe and lean into those uncomfortable growth seasons in life. These conversations are literal proof that you too can go from surviving to thriving. It's about building what I call your mindset toolkit and taking action even when it feels hard. And well, on that note, time is our most valuable resource. So grab some coffee and let's get to today's conversation. Hey friends, welcome back to another episode of But What If You Did. I'm Allison and I'm just so appreciative that you chose to come hang with me for a bit today. So to be completely transparent, I recorded this conversation coming off of an incredibly overwhelming week for me. Between packing to move in with my significant other, my job position changing, really leaving a project that I've spent 4 years on and don't really remember life before, which sounds so silly, and yet I've been so absorbed in this, and then we went through a global pandemic in the middle of it, and it just feels wild that life existed before this project. And I've been working through some just minor health challenges and still trying to find ways to prioritize and show up for this community that has been the best part of this hard season that I've been in. It's just been a lot, and I feel like my head has so much been in a fog lately. I was talking to my life coach the other night, and we were talking through some of what I'm struggling with, and so much of it was about how I just feel paralyzed by uncertainty. And I have definitely had more than one occasion where I broke down in tears and literally had no idea what triggered it, especially in the last couple of weeks. I share this as the ever-present reminder that it truly is that we are all going through something, and the person on the other end of the microphone is no different than you. They have their own messy life struggles just like you do, and the middle is messy. And it feels messy and it feels hard. And it feels really hard to give yourself grace, even though you know that you should. So if you are in this struggle, if you are in this middle season, I hear you, I see you, I am right there with you. And today's conversation was really timely for me. Lindsay talks about how to best represent your best skills through transitional seasons in life. We talk about finding the life lesson in everything and how the universe will just keep trying to teach you the lesson until you truly see and absorb what that lesson is. And we talk a lot about why it's time to reframe and swap the word struggle to challenge. And to be honest, I left the conversation feeling pretty encouraged, and I hope that you will too. So on that note, friends, thank you so much for coming to hang today, and let's get to the conversation with Lindsay. All right, everyone. I am so excited for today's conversation. Welcome to the show, Lindsay.
Thank you for having me.
All right. So I want to give you the opportunity to tell my community a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Lindsay Williams. I am the co-founder of MyUTI, which is a femtech platform helping women who suffer from chronic urinary tract infections. It's a super fun topic. But I also have been a consultant in the healthcare space for many years now, and married to my wonderful husband, Cody, and have two young children. We live just outside of Atlanta.
That is wonderful. I love that it's the femtech industry. That's such a fun name and so deceiving if you don't know what it means.
It's basically, right, like things where women solving women problems for healthcare through technology. So it's really a cool space, and it's predominantly been focused on menstrual and menopause issues. But if you look at like an overall map of femtech, you'll see everything from like NYX, like period underwear, all the way to like legit like biotech companies developing like female Viagra.
So, it's a pretty broad, innovative industry. And yet I feel like there's so much, like you said, that falls under the umbrella of that.
Yeah, definitely.
So I know your story went from working in the corporate world, more to entrepreneurship. On this podcast, we talk about the messy life transitions that so many of us are going through. And as millennials, how we often feel really trapped when we're in these middle stages, because our whole lives, we are taught that you go from point A to point B and you collect all the little nuggets along the way and the gold stars to get to that next level. But nobody talks about the hard, messy middle seasons where you just want to give up. So because you've gone through all of these big transitions from corporate all the way to entrepreneurship, I would love to hear or talk a little bit about what you have found as transferable skills that you've had along the way and how you've kind of learned to represent those skills when you're navigating this messy middle season. Something I've been hearing a lot from my listeners is, well, I'm ready to change, or this isn't the industry I want to work in anymore, but I don't have any skills to get me to the next point. And I think that that's a completely made up limiting belief that so many of us live by. And so I would love to talk and hear your perspective on how you've maybe represented some of those skills.
First, I'd like to say the game is rigged. There is no, right? Like, collect all your tokens, pass go, get the house on, you know, Madison Avenue, whatever. It's predominantly bullshit. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. Some things are true. It's more who you know than what you know, because skills can be taught. And I think it's more about being able to verbalize the skills that can't be taught, right? Like interpersonal communication and relationship management and the ability to learn things quickly, the go-getter attitude, the hard work ethic. Those things can't be taught, but you can learn new skills. You can learn Excel. You can learn PowerPoint. You can learn Squadcast. You can learn all of these like no code options. And there's so many resources out there to be able to do that. And I think predominantly, and this is going to get into like a whole nother topic a little bit, but like men don't have any qualms about taking one half of an Excel course and considering themselves an expert, right? So I think to a little bit of like how I've learned to manage some of those like transferable skills is lean on who I know. And a lot of that just came from connecting and asking shamelessly, like, oh, you know somebody there? I would love an introduction, right? And then asking them, hey, can I take you to coffee? Or, hey, I'm trying to learn more about this industry. Do you mind spending 20 minutes with me and answering my questions? And bringing some good, thoughtful questions to the table. And then having like at least a little bit of knowledge to be dangerous in the conversation. And that has probably gotten me further in my career than any hard skills. I don't even know what I would say I have, to be honest, right? Like I don't have a hard skill set. I'm not a coder. I'm not a software engineer. I understand that's not necessarily transferable for a lot of positions where you do have to have hard skills. I would say for that though, you can learn, and there's a lot of free resources online to at least get your toe in the water. And then the rest is just the attitude to say, I'm going to learn it and I'm going to do it.
I think that that is such an important thing. I just finished my master's last August, and my master's is in management of information systems. And so much of the degree was focused on soft skills, which I thought was fascinating because it's an IT degree. And the fact that they have shifted so much of the curriculum to communication skills and soft skills and building relationships and knowing a little bit about everything so that you can manage the overall. Like, it was so much less about knowing strictly the IT skills and knowing how to be an analyst or knowing how to step into these really tech heavy roles, and more about how do you communicate? Because what do people not understand? They don't understand the tech, and you need to be able to communicate how to help them fix the tech or how to change the tech or how the tech can benefit them in the long run, right? And so I think that talking about the soft skills is such an important thing. And I have been trying to stress that with people so much. So I love that you shared that, because I think that's such a critical, important part of all of this.
I also think there's this perception, and this may lead us into the next question, but there's this perception around, I remember being in college and looking at people who had jobs and thinking like, man, they must be so smart. Like, they've got it figured out. They've got their shit together. Like, they know what they're doing. They seem so competent. And then I realize now at 35, like, that is a charade. Nobody actually knows what they're doing. And to be honest, I actually had a very wonderful friend and mentor as I was starting consulting. She had been in the game working with big pharma and had some major name clients. And She took me aside and was like, it's literally just all bullshit. Like, it's a game. There is no substance here. Like, it is just people need to be told information that you either intrinsically know or can easily find out. And you're just synthesizing it for someone else. And that's really all it is. And you have to charge a lot of money for that. And I was like, wow.
You're like, okay, yeah. No, I remember someone saying very early on, like, stop believing everyone knows what they're doing, because they don't. No one knows what they're doing. And you're just like everyone else. Everyone gives off this air of confidence until you look at them behind the scenes and you see all the messy stuff they're going through behind the scenes, and you realize they're just a better actor when they're at work than you are.
And I would say there's a reckoning to be had with that, because one thing I've been trying with myself, which right now I'm serving as vice president of business development for a biotech company, in addition to running and co-founding my own startup company. Part of that is just because we're still in the very nascent stages of my company, and so it's just not ready for full time yet. But I think there is this approach where it's okay to ask questions. Like, I want to start to demystify this. Like, yes, there's confidence, and you should have confidence in your ability to do something. But I think because you lack experience doesn't mean that you lack ability. And if you lack experience, then don't try to pretend like you have it, right? Because I think that's where I see a lot of the, like, corporate bureaucracy BS, you know, that comes into play when people walk in the room and are like, I have the answers, even though they do lack experience, rather than coming at it with curiosity. Because people, when you ask questions out of curiosity, aren't offended, they're not defensive. It just is an opportunity to learn. And it's, for the most part, I've been very hard pressed to find people who aren't willing to teach.
I love the curiosity lens, because I think that that is something that, especially, like, you hear a lot in the personal development space, right? You should learn to look at it from a curious point of view. You learn to be curious. That's what's going to move you forward. But I think sometimes we don't really understand what that means. And I also think there's something to be said for embellishing, because when I'm trying to help someone rewrite their resume to better represent the skills, what I don't want them to do is to over embellish what they've done, because overselling yourself is not going to set you up for success, but showing them that you're curious and able and willing to learn is going to set you up for success, because they're going to realize that you may need a little more guidance, but you're going to put in the work to get there, versus they're going to expect you to know and be disappointed when you don't know, type thing.
I had a mentor who really early on, when I interviewed for my very first job out of college with Abbott Laboratories, and she had said to me, like, you have literally nothing to bring to the table. You are so green. You have, like, no experience whatsoever that would be valuable to this company. So really what you have to do is close them on giving you the opportunity to prove that you can do the job. And I have used that same line to close, right? Like, give me the opportunity to prove that I can do this successfully, right? And
yeah,
it's an interesting psychological thing, because you're not asking for a job, right? You're asking for an opportunity to prove something. And people are kind of, I notice, right, that people are kind of like, okay, that's, like, it's a little bit different, but it flips the script in a way where it's, help me help you, right?
Yes. That's such a, yes. I love that. I feel like I'm putting that one in my back pocket moving forward. So from your perspective in the corporate world, what else have you learned that you feel like has really helped you to start to pivot towards an entrepreneurial space, or to pivot into your own business? Because I think that there's also so many skills that you learn in the corporate world that you start to write off as not even being skills, and you just assume that everyone is good at these things, and they're not. But when you're trying to pivot, it's about learning to take these really robust skills you learn in the corporate world and applying them to new pathways in life, whether that's in your personal life, your relationships, your careers. What are some of those skills that you think of when you go from the corporate world into these other facets of life?
I think it comes down to a handful of things. I mean, specific to becoming an entrepreneur, I think what I've seen in the corporate world is, you know, you can have a really good product and have it fail because you either didn't take your customer into account, you thought you had a really great idea in the lab, and then you take it out and you didn't really understand the customer needs. So you didn't do proper planning. You were a little bit maybe over egotistical about your product's value and worth, or you over planned you tried to get it perfect and you never actually got it out the door, right? So there is this like balance between really understanding and taking the time to understand and go through and have a good confidence in that what you're doing, and also at some point pushing it out and just pushing go and just trying it. Because ultimately, I do think there are a lot of companies who have not great products, but they have nailed the execution. And that's what counts, right? And then there's really great companies with phenomenal products that never get off the ground because of poor leadership, poor execution. So some of those things. So not in some ways it seems overwhelming because it's like, oh my gosh, I have to do all these things and get it exactly right.
Right.
Allow yourself grace, right? There's going to be mistakes, but you gotta nail the big ones, right? Like you've gotta understand your product market fit. Like just bottom line. If you have that, you can make some mistakes along the way in smaller ways that you can tweak, but you've got to get that core foundation. And I see companies that haven't nailed that core foundation and they just continually struggle. Companies that have nailed that core foundation do well, even with products that like are mediocre, to be honest, right? Or even a mediocre sales force or a mediocre executive team. The other part of it is definitely that concept. And I think, oh, it was Michelle Obama that said it in a quote that I read. And she said, I have been at the table and in the room at every level, right? Literally across the earth with billionaires, with diplomats, with world leaders. And there is no room and there is no table that you are not qualified to be at. Like these people, I think, touching back on what we said earlier, these people are not all Mensa level geniuses and they don't all have this phenomenal value that we can't fathom having. Their path has just led them to a different place. And I think that's something, you know, people think, oh, I could never be that person. Well, sure you could, right? Like you just need to take a different path to get there. And I think that's important in looking at like going from super corporate, because it can be really hard to think about these like big corporations with these mega budgets and these mega dollars and then think like, I'm just little old me. What could I possibly do? And the secret is you work hard, you know your product market fit, and then you figure the rest out, right?
Yeah. Like,
as you go.
It's about who you're serving. That's something I've really taken away lately, that like, it's not about you.
Yeah.
It's about the other person and looking at everything through that lens. So something that we spoke about the first time that we chatted was how millennials are really living in what should be the highest earning years of our life. And yet most of us, a lot of us, several of us are still living in this paycheck to paycheck world. And that has become such, like, it's so disillusioned at this point, right? Like we have these societal expectations that were placed on us from a young age, and it's really changed the way that we view our finances. It's shaped the way that we feel about our self-worth. And really, there were a lot of external circumstances that kind of led us to be in the position that we're in that has made it so that it isn't going to be the highest earning years of our life. And for us as a generation, that's going to fall into a different part of our lives. I feel like there's so much that we could dig into on this.
So I feel very lucky, frankly, because I was planning on going to law school and I didn't want to spend forever in school. So I switched to a different state university where I could graduate early because they would just let me take as many classes as I wanted. Mm-hmm. By doing that, I literally changed the trajectory of my life, right? But specifically my career, because I snuck into the workforce in 07 before the big crash.
Right before the financial crash.
Literally like by the skin of my teeth. Yeah. And it has made a massive difference in my trajectory. Mm-hmm. The other advice that I got early on was to get into a startup company, because 1 year in a startup is equivalent to 5 in a big company. And that I think also accelerated my path. What I would say, because I have a lot of friends who didn't graduate early, most didn't. And a lot of the friends that I have that ended up going to law school, where it was like, oh, guaranteed you're going to make 6 figures as a like junior level associate in 06, 07. And then by the time they graduated law school, it was like there weren't even associate jobs to have at all. I think the reality is what worked for our parents' generation is not going to work for us in many ways. This concept of loyalty when it comes to work does not exist because companies just frankly aren't loyal to you. They will lay you off in a heartbeat. As soon as they can save 10 cents for someone cheaper, you're gone. And I think millennials are figuring that out and saying, that's fine. I'll go chase opportunity, lifestyle, money. It's why you hear of all these like the ping pong tables in startups in Silicon Valley trying to appease this concept of like work-life balance and making it fun and all that stuff. So I think realistically, we have to throw that old school book out the window. Like having the 2.5 kids, you know, white picket fence home and making good money and home by five for dinner every day, it just doesn't exist anymore. And I think the more that we try to force ourselves into that box, the more unhappy we become. Yeah. There is nothing wrong with doing what you love and having a different life than what your parents imagined for you.
Yes, I think that is so powerful. I think we spend a lot of time, even when we realize that we shouldn't force ourselves into the boxes, it is such a long-term mental game to constantly remind yourself. Because I know, like, I have limiting beliefs that I realize are limiting beliefs, and I address them daily, and my boyfriend still calls me out on, hey, you're struggling with this thing. And we've talked about this before. Like, you are putting yourself in a box. Why are you doing that? And then it's, and I think that sometimes we think that we have these like, right, I know this is a problem, so I'm not going to do it again mentality. And it's just, it's not that cut and dry. It's not that black and white.
Oh, and I think we need to, so I'm taking this course right now through Chairman Mom, which is a group I'm a part of. And Natalie Kogan, who's written a couple of books on burnout, is moderating the course. And she has this concept around struggle versus challenge. And it has been life-changing for me in thinking like life has challenges, right? There are real challenges. Yeah. But we also don't have to struggle in those challenges. And part of it is how we edit our own thoughts and our story about ourselves. And the other part of it is how we choose to treat ourselves in the midst of our challenge. And I think that is something that I think we're all going to learn from, because we did come from these backgrounds of you go to college, you get a good job, you stay loyal, you get married, you settle down, you have your kids, right? Like, and you retire at 60 or 65. That doesn't exist. That won't exist. It will probably not be feasible to exist. I mean, I was reading an article just the other day talking about how the birth rate declining, like people were literally going to have to rethink concept of retirement. And it's probably going to be that most people in our generation will not retire at 65, but we will continue to work. And I think that sounds really depressing until you start to think about it and say, if we're living longer and we have more opportunity to do the things that we like to do, maybe that actually gives us an opportunity to change our path and our lives into, hey, you know what? I didn't make as much money as I statistically should have in my 30s, but I pursued something that gave me passion, that fueled me, that was intellectually stimulating. Yeah. And you know what? It either worked out or it didn't work out, but okay, I'm 40. It failed. That's fine. Guess what? Yeah. I've still got another 40 years.
Right. I think it's also interesting because it's like we are kind of this, I feel like we are a transitional generation, right? Yes. We are the transition from boomers. Yes, I realize there's a little bit of a generation between us, but like we are the massive transition between didn't know life with the internet until we were in like middle school, high school, and then it slowly became a thing. So we bridged this weird technology gap where at the same time, I think the way that we learned things from our parents has shaped us to a certain extent, but now we're starting to see how that doesn't work in modern society. And it's on our generation to move that to younger generations, because to some extent, Gen Zers are still getting some of the parenting that we were, but now we're starting to realize that we have different values and how we want to live our lives is a little bit different. And we're starting to realize that like we were workaholics up until this point, and then the pandemic taught us that maybe that's not the best way or the most fulfilling way to live our lives. And so now we're reevaluating. And I think that that's the other thing, going back to what you said a little while ago with corporate jobs right now, is, you know, there's all these news blasts all over the media right now, right, about can't hire enough people, can't find people to work minimum wage jobs. People got smarter during the pandemic. They realized, I don't have to work a minimum wage job to work. I'm going to wait for a job that pays me my worth, and they're not willing to settle right now. And so you are losing your entry-level workforce because people got smart and they realized, oh, I can choose to put myself in this situation, or I can choose to wait a little bit longer, grow my skills, and actually put myself in a situation in which I'm going to thrive. And I think that that is such a generational shift that we're making that is really going to impact our children's generations and the generations after that.
I agree. I also think that the concept of entrepreneurship in the age of the internet is a vastly different thing than our parents' generation could ever have comprehended. And so being able, I mean, Fiverr, Upworks, all these things, the gig economy has made it hard for companies to have these entry-level positions. There's also this weird dynamic with corporate, and I use this, it's a bit crude, but I use this concept of it's like placing an ad where it's like virgin wanted, 10 years experience, sex required. Yep. And you're like, what? Like, what? How do I even get that job?
Yes.
Where, you know, even internships, right, are like hard to come by. And so it's this catch-22 situation. And I think people get frustrated by it. And they say, you know what, there's got to be a different path. And now that the internet's out there, like, why not? Why not, you know, go and offer services or skill sets or things that I can monetize in a way that, you know, isn't necessarily a traditional path either. And so I think there's going to be this reckoning at some point where companies are going to figure out like, oh, we're going to have to do better to get people to come here.
Well, I just think that people didn't dabble a lot in the entrepreneurial space before I started this podcast, right? And like, I didn't realize that there were jobs like virtual assistants and online business managers and social media managers. And these are primarily people that go and self-teach themselves, or they pull the skills that they learned in the corporate world and say, I can do this better on my own, and I can set my prices and I can be paid what I'm worth. And so a virtual assistant online might charge $25 an hour, whereas in a 10-year into my career administrative spot, like I may only be making $20 an hour right now. And I'm like, oh, well, I could go do less, work my own hours and make more on the side.
And that doesn't even touch the like tax implications, the write-offs, the advantages. Right. So like your $20 an hour after taxes and everything, and you know, is taken out by your company is like 15. But if you're an entrepreneur and you're making 25, and then you can offset with, you know, expenses into the business, and then it's like all of a sudden you're taking home a lot more of that 25.
Right. And so I think you're right that there is an age of the reckoning that's kind of coming with the internet, and people just. It's not that I don't think that they would realize it's there if it was pointed out to them. I just think that there is a little bit of a shield up where they don't see it unless it's pointed out to them. I had a conversation with one of my superiors at work a couple weeks ago, and he was like, well, you know, I just don't understand why they're having such a hard time filling these jobs. And I'm like, what do you mean? Like, I do. They're advertising $10 an hour and wondering why people aren't running back.
I pay when they basically babysitter made more than that. Like my college babysitter gets paid more than that.
Right. And so I just think that it's such an interesting time to kind of watch the thought process of having these conversations and then being able to challenge them to think differently about it and to see that there are these opportunities outside of what they grew up with.
Yeah, because they grew up with a, hey, get in wherever you can, start in the mailroom, and in 30 years, you'll be the CEO, right? Like that was the American dream. And now most of those corporate jobs end up turning into dead end, right? Because it's like, come work in the mailroom, get overlooked for 15 promotions, stay in the same job forever. And oh, by the way, you're miserable and we're going to rate you regularly. Aren't you happy to work here? And the answer is, I can go do this for myself somewhere else. Or, you know what, maybe I don't have to chase this dream of having a corporate job. And I'm emotionally okay with having real life balance. And you know what, maybe I don't have the bigger house and maybe I don't have the newer car. But I also feel like we're the generation where we saw our parents work really hard to have those things. And maybe we're looking at it going, like, I would have rather had you home to actually be with me as a child than to be out working so I could have nice things, right? Like, I think there's a lot of this inward reflection and emotional work that our generation is doing to try to work through what is the meaning of this life? Why are we here? What is worth it? Is my happiness actually valuable, or am I just an object of productivity?
Yeah. I think that the internal reflection thing has come up in quite a few conversations I've had recently on the podcast. And I think it's totally true. I think millennials are, we're at this point where we're realizing that it wasn't working. So we got to stop and slam on the brakes. But because the universe did that for us, now we had a lot of quiet time in the last year by ourselves to start self-reflection processes and journaling and listening to podcasts and listening to meditations. And we have taken this time to internally reflect. And now we're getting to the point where we're coming out of all this and we're like, okay, now I'm going to start taking action. Like now I've done that growth work and now I'm ready to move forward. And I think it's a really interesting time to watch it happen.
I also think there's this concept of like the bucket list family, right? Where it was like,
yeah,
we're just going to go travel the world and that's fine. Like we're going to do a different thing. And understanding that like seeing other people do it. Like I remember my husband and I had an opportunity to go to Hawaii before we had kids. And it was part of a work trip for his company. And so we were sitting at the bar looking over this like gorgeous bay and talking to the bartender. And he was a guy who used to work on Wall Street. And he's like, I came out here for a vacation one time. I never left. Just literally quit my job, sold my apartment. I never went home. I live in a tiny apartment. I work at the bar 40 hours a week, maybe. I make decent enough money, but I don't care because I don't really need the money. Like I have my bare necessities paid for. And guess what? I surf every day and I love it. And I live in paradise. And I was like, huh.
Yes, it's totally the millennial deer in headlight. Like, oh, well, when you put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I do think that there's more of that, like people that are hitting this burnout. And we have a saying here, it's called, you know, do some good navel gazing, right? Where you're just really looking in and going, maybe this isn't what I actually want. Maybe this isn't actually what makes me happy. And I think the difference is that our parents' generation were taught it's not about your happiness. And yet our generation started that, right? Like our parents taught us, like, well, we do want you to be happy, but we think the way to make you happy is to follow this path. So it's like we've had this little nugget instilled in us, right? That like happiness is important. But now we're recognizing that the modality to achieve happiness is not necessarily feasible with the path that our parents followed. And I think what we're seeing in Gen Z is this like actualization of happiness, right? In terms of like, now happiness is really all that matters. And I don't care at all about the corporate anything. Like it's whatever just makes me happy. And if I'm a nomad, then I'm a nomad, but I'm happy.
It's totally true. I think something else that we've kind of carried over from our parents' generation is this aversion to risk. Our parents wanted the best for all of us, right? And so they did everything they could to give us the best life they could. But in doing that and in trying to push us down these very stable trajectories, they, in a way, taught us to be more risk adverse. And I think that it's interesting now because we've realized that we've been playing it safe and taking these really stable courses action. But every time we get a feeling to change course or to go after something new, we have this little guy in our head that's like, fear, 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 back up, not good, too much risk, not going to have health insurance, not going to have that, like that. We try to shut down this inner dialogue that's telling us, hey, why don't you try something new? Hey, maybe this isn't the most fulfilling thing for you. Hey, maybe your purpose is bigger than this. And we don't know how to act on that because we have grown up being taught to be risk adverse. And now we're coming into an age where we're realizing if I don't start taking some risks, I'm never going to get to where I want to be. And retraining your brain to go from risk adverse to risk acceptant really is, it's a process. I would love to hear what you've experienced. Are you a more risk adverse person or do you feel like you're pretty like take on the risk and go for it and see what happens?
Well, I started a company in the middle of a global pandemic, so I guess I cannot say I'm risk averse.
No, I'd say you're more risk acceptant for sure.
But I'll say it was an emotional journey to get there. I mean, the company that I co-founded originally was started as like a side hustle, right? And it was supposed to be just a project to bring in some side income because I finally had the like realization of like, oh, everyone else has multiple income streams. Huh, I probably need to get on that.
Also had that realization. Yep.
Yes. And then when COVID hit, all of a sudden a new lane of opportunity opened itself up. And that process was really going through the mental gymnastics of, can I do it? Is it possible? And then coming around to literally, but what if I did? But what if I did? But what if it worked? But what if, right? Why not me? Why not me? Why not all these other people can be successful? Why can't I? And then really just coming down to, what if I don't? What if I don't do it? How am I going to feel in 10, 15, 20 years? What if I don't? What if I stay in the corporate job? What if I stay inside the lines, do what I'm supposed to do? When I came to that was just such disappointment of thinking about, what if I never gave myself a chance? And that was really what changed the tide for me in saying, gotta try, gotta do it. Even if it's a total, utter facepalm failure, I have to try.
Yeah. I think I have definitely had a lot of those moments in the last year as well, but I think it really does come down to the, when you write it out on paper and you say, but what if I did, and you see all the things that could, like all the doors that could open, all the potential in what if you went for it. And then you look at if I didn't, and you realize that you're going to be sitting in the same miserable position. Like, I can't tell you how many times I've come home from work and been like, I am absolutely miserable with what I'm currently doing.
I think there's also this balance with, I'm not saying go quit your job, you know, put yourself in a financially insecure situation, sell everything you own and live on the street to make the dream work. I also feel like that is a very like patriarchal concept of like these guys, you know, in Silicon Valley who are all entrepreneurs who like will constantly spread this, you know, myth of, oh, we didn't pay ourselves for years. And it's like, great, but you also have a trust fund and your parents pay for everything. And that's lovely for you. But don't make that out to be the norm, because I think we also have to match these expectations of like instant success and overnight, you know, viral everything with the fact that it takes a long time, right? Like it takes a really long time to make these things work. Yeah. And it does have to start out as a side hustle. And sometimes that means an hour a night, you know, on the weeknights, right? Just 1 hour or a few hours on the weekend, and just those baby steps of progress to get to a point where you can say, yeah, peace out. I'm done.
I'm done.
Corporate thing. I'm making more of my side gig. I'm out. Right. Yep. And you hear that story a lot more with, at least through like groups like CEO School, with these female entrepreneurs, right, that you meet that do have that, right, that story of, hey, it took me 5 years, but I was finally able to say,
leave
like,
my
I'm
job.
Done. Yeah. And that's when you really see them explode, right, in terms of opportunity and finance. The other thing I would say about risk is I think our generation has had very traumatic experiences in terms of the pandemic, but also the crash in 08. So like we look at things probably differently. Like my husband and I have said, like, we don't look at houses, which is kind of silly because right now the housing market is stupid. But we've never looked at houses as investments, right? Whereas like our parents' generation couldn't fathom not making money off of a house, right? Like, well, of course you buy a house and you sell it for 10 years later for like a big profit.
Right.
Like that's just how it works. Well, when we bought our first house, we bought in like 2011 at the bottom of the market when things were, you know, 30% of what they were worth 3 years prior. And so we kind of always went into homeownership of like, we're doing this because we have to have a place to live and because this is more cost effective. Well, I don't know if it's actually more cost effective than renting, but.
But they tell us it is, and we've believed it, so.
And there are wonderful things about being a homeowner, but in general, this concept of, right, like opportunity, and I think we do look at homes the way we look at cars, which is like, it's, you have to go into it assuming it's going to be a depreciated value asset because that's what we experienced, like as our like first entrance into adulthood was, you know, you don't count on having a job forever. You're not going to stay at a company for 30 years. There's going to be rolling layoffs every other year. Get used to it. And oh yeah, the housing market, don't plan on, you're not guaranteed to make money off of your house if you become a homeowner. And and that I think impacts your, in some ways impacts people either being paralyzed and becoming more risk averse, or for other people, they go, what do I have to lose? What the hell?
Yep.
Right? There's real no sense of security. And that, I think, is the other myth that we tell ourselves in corporate, is this like, oh, job security. And I'm like, really? I've never met anybody who feels super confident in their job. Like, literally never a soul that says like, oh, I'm good. Like, I would never leave this job. Yeah, you will.
Well, and that was, I definitely felt the security from like, this job will always be there. And then the pandemic happened and we saw layoffs in the hundreds of thousands in ways that we have never, ever experienced before, right? And then all of a sudden it becomes, wow, I was dedicating so much of my life and doing everything to go above and beyond to move my career forward here. And overnight, I became a number on a piece of paper and everything I contributed to that company meant absolutely nothing. And I could have been unemployed at the end of all of this. And like you said, it just gives you a whole new perspective. And I think it's that lens that changed how we're looking at our life and what we want our life holistically to look like moving forward. And it became less about, well, I obtained the dream job and now I'm going to make it work and I'm going to climb the corporate ladder, and more about, you know what? I'm comfortable where I am. And maybe I don't need that next promotion because my manager told me I should want it. And more about finding a life that works for us.
I can look different for lots of people. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, I sometimes say to myself, like, why couldn't I just be happy in a corporate job that's not stressful, that's 9 to 5, that I'm not constantly thinking and obsessing about or pouring myself into, and make decent money and come home and turn it off, right? Like, yep. Just turn the brain off and not worry about it. Unfortunately, that's just not the way I'm wired,
right?
Like, I just, and that's okay. That's okay. Yep. I've had to accept that too. So then that means I have to figure out how to feed that appropriately.
Right?
Versus people who are perfectly content. And then they get this, like, the backlash of like, well, why aren't you getting promoted? Well, why aren't you like trying to go for more? You could do better. You could put more effort in. And it's like, why? Because at 5 o'clock, I turn off my computer and I'm done and I'm happy and I have time with my kids and my family and I can travel and I can do what I want. And that's what's important to me. And so I do think there is this growing acceptance in our generation of like, it doesn't have to look just one way.
Yep. So if you could look back through like all these big transitions that you've gone through, what type of advice do you think you would give yourself? Will you see these women paving this path that tell you that it's possible? What do you tell yourself to keep going?
And the lesson, because I'm a firm believer, the universe will keep sending you the same problem in different forms until you learn the lesson. Mm. So just find the lesson and then use it and move on to the next. Because I do look back at situations that were hard, situations that were messy, and think in the midst of it, it's so hard to see through the fog of that.
Right.
But now looking back with way more clarity, I needed that. I needed those lessons. Yeah. I needed that experience. And everything was a building block to the next step, even when it was really hard. And I think it does go back to that concept of like the struggle versus the challenge and looking at things as challenges versus struggling in the challenge, right? So to a certain extent, being a little bit more maybe emotionally detached from some of those things, because, especially situations with like work or friends, relationships, when things change, it can be really hard. And I'm not saying to deny your feelings, like feel what you need to feel. But at the same time, I think sometimes we make it a bigger deal than it necessarily has to be versus being willing to just accept, process
what it is,
and move on. Right.
Yeah.
It's not the end of the world. Every time you think it's the end of the world, it's not the end of the world. Like, life goes on. It continues. There are people who have dealt with much, 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 much worse, not to diminish your feelings, but just that you can survive this. People have survived worse. You will probably survive worse, and you will survive this.
I have a friend that consistently says, you've survived 100% of your worst days and you will survive this one too.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think that that's always a really good reminder to just kind of have on repeat in the back of your mind when something really terrible is happening.
Yeah. And then it doesn't always have to be, you know, find the lesson, find the thing that you can look at and say, like, acknowledge the way you feel, point to one thing and say, what can I learn? And then move forward, right? Like, and sometimes even literally just working through that process, I think really helps in terms of being able to create a healthy relationship with that messy middle, because sometimes it's just hard. Like, life is just hard sometimes, and there's nothing you can do to change it. But having a bad attitude about it makes it worse.
Mm. Yep. So something I think millennials are also exceptionally bad at doing is giving ourselves credit for when we did make it through a really messy time. We look at it and we want to move on and we're like, oh, well, that's done and in the past. Thank goodness that's passed. Instead of celebrating ourselves for like, man, that was really hard, but I didn't give up and I kept going. So when you look back a year from now, what is it that you think you'll be most proud of yourself for?
I hope I'm most proud of myself for fundraising for my startup. I hope that that is successful because I know that's really hard. One, it's my first time fundraising. Two, I am a female, and so statistically the odds are stacked against me. Yep. We're obviously in a very interesting financial market, so it's kind of hard to tell. I hear a lot of people talking about how much money's out there, and I'm like, that's great. Want to tell me where?
Okay.
Where exactly is this money, and how do I find it?
Yeah.
But I think actually doing it, right? Like, I think that's the part where, circling all the way back to the first question, right? These corporate lessons to becoming an entrepreneur is like at some point just putting yourself out there and asking for it and going for it truly. So that I hope is what I'm very proud of a year from now.
I love that. Well, I think that this conversation has been, it's been really good for me because I am definitely in the middle of a growth and transition season and I have so many good ways to go think about things now after the number of meltdowns I've had through the struggle this week. They're going to be about challenges now. But thank you so much for joining me. This has been a great conversation and I've really enjoyed it.
So much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
All right, friends, until next week, I will see you right back here, same time. Just wanted to say a quick thank you for coming to hang with me for a bit today. If today's conversation vibed with you, I would so appreciate if you took a few seconds to subscribe, rate, and review. This really helps to get the podcast into the hands of new listeners. For show notes and links to all resources discussed in today's conversation, head on over to butwhatifyoudidpod.com/listen now. Remember, friends, it's truly on us to inspire the next generation of changemakers. So I'll leave you with a little food for thought. It's one thing to change our world, it's another to change the future.